everybody, and welcome into episode number 288 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Michael.
I'm Emily.
All the way from South Korea, she's back.
All the way.
You took a long
Skyping
flight.
Skyping it in.
Yeah. You took a flight out there. You took a flight back.
Just for the podcast.
No.
Like, she's jumping on a flight in about an hour.
Jet lag does not affect me.
She's invincible.
I don't feel time zones.
I actually got a pretty good way of dealing with jet lag. Like, I don't get that much
napping?
Jet lag. It is not
napping.
It's the exact opposite.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm on the plane, I don't sleep at all. And then when I land, it's usually a brutal first day. But I immediately get onto whatever schedule my local
that
time
makes
is.
Sense.
So if I'm like, I do this flying back to California. I'll fly and then immediately get onto whatever California time is. And then I'll keep myself up until it's the appropriate time to go to bed and whatever. Wake up the next morning. Great.
Yeah. Mm. South Korea is, however, like the exact opposite of it's a 12-hour time difference. So it's like the exact opposite
right.
of whatever time it is here.
Oh, no, and I did the same thing flying California to London, which I think is eight or 9 hours. So, like, I can't imagine doing 12, but with most of that in the air, too, on top of that, like.
But you're right, like, staying up, like, it depends, like, definitely, like, on what time you land.
Exactly.
Because if you land at, like, 11 p.m., you're like, great, I'll just wake up tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Do whatever. But if you land at, like, noon, you're like, all right, I have to now try and stay awake for the next.
And start with lunch.
9 or 10 hours.
That's the thing for me is if you get on the food schedule, like if you land at 12 or 1, immediately have lunch and then do dinner. Like, this is just me.
That's
well,
true.
Thanks, guys. Welcome to Travel Tips, a podcast. So we're going to talk about our interesting facts, which we then incorporate into trivia questions for those of you that haven't listened before. And if you
Where have you been?
Yeah. And if you have listened before, welcome back. Emily's here. It's great.
I'm here.
But you know, I'm going to go first.
Okay.
I'm going to do a little assumption here and assume that we are all millennials.
Correct.
I'm like right on the cusp.
All right. So, millennials, what have you killed recently? You know how millennials are killing things?
Yeah. I think the last thing I got accused of is killing protest, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
Killing protest?
Yeah, there was a protest over by the White House, and I was working an event, and somebody accused me of killing protest because I was hosting an event instead of going to the protest.
Oh, okay. Have you gotten accused of anything as a millennial?
I've heard that millennials have recently been accused of killing divorce rates, which is like...
I feel like a good thing.
Why would you get mad about that?
Is it from the lack of marriage or are we just staying together?
Is they just apparently stay together better. But also, like, there's also less data, you know, because they haven't been married as long.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
The list I've heard is ridiculous. It's, you know, napkins. It's the diamond industry.
Okay.
It's home ownership.
Okay. The home ownership is a whole other debate, right? And a whole other thing.
Avocado toast.
Maybe napkins could, you know, like millennials are killing them because they're terrible. Why would I use a napkin when I have a paper towel?
That's exactly.
Oh, I think I meant like at restaurants. And I was like, I use napkins at restaurants, but you're right. I do not buy napkins in the store.
Absolutely not.
I just own paper towels.
Yeah.
Well, that's a thing millennials are killing, right? So a couple months ago, millennials became the highest percentage of the workplace.
Sure.
And I saw a thing that somebody would change the word millennial in those millennials are killing X articles to be people aged what? So my question is, what is the top age in 2018 of a millennial? Like, so how old is the oldest millennial today in 2018?
It's higher than you expect. I think it's like 35, isn't it?
I was going to say 35.
Both in agreement.
I say 35.
So 37. So you guys are both right in that range. So the oldest millennial today is age 37, 2018. They're born after 1980, and then 1996 is also the cutout. This is according to the Pew Research Center. So anytime you say, oh, there should be more millennials elected to Congress or millennials are killing X, just people age 37. And it just kind of takes on a whole new meaning, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like generation, because I've talked about this too, because like I'm right on the lower. I'm born late 95.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like 3 months away from not being a millennial. but my brothers are older than me. And so they're like more firmly like in the millennial bracket. And I think that makes a difference because I have friends my own age who only have younger siblings who are like also on the cusp, but they have younger siblings. that are more in like the Gen Z time range, and I think that also like affects how much of a millennial, like acting like a millennial one is, because my brothers are like, you know, like really like in that, and I grew up with them, and so I did the things that they did, and they did millennial things. They were like true 90s kids, and I was like barely a 90s kid, as opposed to people who were like born 90, 95, only had younger siblings, were like don't have any like 90s kids experiences because they were four.
Yeah, I feel, I mean, I was late 80s, so I'm like right in the middle millennial, and it drives me nuts when people just poo-poo, you know? Like, hey, we're functioning, well, I wouldn't say functioning adults, but we are an adult. It's like, I can rent a car, okay? And if I can rent a car and you're trusting me to rent a car, I can kill napkins and you can be okay with it. At least that's how I think. But yeah, so age 37 in 2018's oldest age of millennials. And also, bonus fact, that millennials have recently upped the number as 20% live in multi-generational homes. So bonus fact. Yeah, so that's like the highest it's been in a while. So multiple generation homes, 20%, 1 in 5.
Multi as in like 3 or more generations?
2 or more.
2 or more generations?
Yeah. It's
so
not
like
just
living
millennials.
With your parents?
Yep, not just.
I was about to say that's the way like, it's going to be spun.
Okay.
Sorry, that's the general population, not just millennials.
I wasn't sure there was like grandparents, parents. Millennials, or whether it was living with
parents, millennials, kids, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, that's my fact. So, who's got the segue?
That does not segue into either one.
Yeah, no, I got nothing.
You got nothing. All right. Well, then, Emily, why don't you go?
Oh, I could.
Oh, sorry. One quick clarification. 1 in 5 Americans live in a multi-generational household. That's not just millennials. That's entire of America. And it just reached its highest percentage point in a while. So I just wanted to make sure that I'm saying the right thing. Okay. Now, I said the right thing. Now it's Emily's turn to say the right thing. That's a segue.
Okay. Bow. I had another segue.
That's Lindsay's segue.
So one of the other things
that
millennials have been accused of killing is like Applebee's.
Chain restaurants.
Chain restaurants, things like that.
Great.
This is not about casual chain restaurants, but it is about the opposite. It's about the Michelin Guide.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so...
Damn, that's a segue.
That was a reach, but I think she hit it.
I was like really... I was trying my best.
Damn.
And so I recently found out that DC has a Michelin Guide, which I didn't know earlier, and I had like argued with someone that it didn't, and then I was wrong. But this is... According to CNN.com, how many meals does a Michelin Guide inspector eat at a restaurant every year?
Wow.
I don't know, but I want that job.
Huh. How many do they eat at the restaurant? I will say that I am not a foodie. I mean, I like eating food, but I don't. I know the Michelin Guide is that there's a certain way to get it, and it's the top restaurants, and they're uber hard to get into. Like, I know that there's this whole big process, and it's a big deal.
It's like a big deal.
Yeah, my friend posted that they went to a Michelin restaurant, and they got at least 200 likes on the post. It was crazy.
How millennial of you.
One like per dollar that they spent on that
absolutely.
Meal.
Yeah.
So is the question that how many they eat at the restaurant to certify them Michelin stars, or how many they eat throughout the year to test to see if they can find?
So the Michelin Michelin inspectors, they work like completely anonymously. They're like not allowed to talk about, like their parents aren't allowed to know. It's like really like on the DL.
I know friends that are FBI agents, and I know more about what they're doing than these guys.
I don't know like how you lie to
on this fact, guys. I have something to tell you.
Oh,
if you're a restaurant tester and I haven't gone to go with you, I'm gonna be mad.
That's not allowed.
What? You have to go eat by yourself?
You have to go eat by yourself. Or, like, you'll go in, like, pairs of, like, testers, but you can't just, like, bring friends, I don't think.
Oh, I would assume somebody's having an affair. Oh, you're getting dinner with Johnny again? What the heck?
And so they do, like, there's, like, the Michelin stars, like, 1, 2, 3 Michelin stars. But there's also, they eat at lots of different restaurants because there's, like, something called, like, Bib Gourmand, which is for, like, really high-quality restaurants that are, like, 2 people can eat for less than $40, like, between 2 people.
Whoa.
So it's like nice restaurants within like a more affordable price range.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So like they test for that. I looked up all of the ones in DC. I'm like, I know what I'm doing for the rest of my life because there's like 45 of them.
Oh, cool.
And so they try and like scout new restaurants. But then also if someone thinks that a restaurant has like Michelin star potential, or it has a Michelin star, and they're trying to, like, do they get to keep that star? Do they get a star? Do they lose a star? Things like that. They'll eat there, like, 9 or 10 times with, like, different inspectors. So, like, it gets, like, quadruple, quintuple rated to, like, make sure all that decision.
I wonder, how do they pick what you order on the menu, too? That's always the big thing that I'm impressed with,
like,
foodies.
Super
or
secretive. Like,
yeah. They got a rubric.
I read this interview on CNN.com, and it was, like, anonymous. It was just, like, we met with an inspector.
Oh.
And he told us some things, but not all of them.
Oh. Mysterious.
Mysterious.
His face, like, has been covered to protect his own identity.
It's, like, super secretive because, obviously, like, they want, like, an authentic restaurant experience.
Yeah.
As opposed to people, like, you know, giving them extra stuff, or, you know, like, doing special things with their food because they want, like, a better... It's like Food Critics, you know, but, like,
sure,
the fanciest,
yeah, it makes
food
sense,
critic you'll ever see.
So we're trying to guess how many meals they eat in a year.
How many... Well, not how many meals they eat at restaurants.
How many...
As part of their job during the year. I
Got
guess
it.
They could eat at restaurants in their own time as well.
Oh, gosh. I feel like
say,
I would not want to.
I'm
going to
say, like 100.
100. Okay, so, like... 1 in 3 days, roughly.
Yeah.
A third of the days. I think,
like,
that's
2 or 3 times a week.
I think that's a pretty good guess. But I think that these guys are into it. I think it's like an every other day kind of thing. I think it's going to be closer to like 175.
Three days a week would be every other day.
Yeah.
It sure would be.
Well, it's 350 whatever days in a year.
Ish. Give or take.
Give or take.
Yeah.
Within 15, how many days are there
right
in a year?
Okay, I'm going to stick with the 175. I think it's 1 in 2 days.
I don't think Lindsay swayed me. I'm sticking at 100.
So you're 1 in 3. I'm 1 in 2, roughly.
Yeah. Give or
so
take.
So you said 175,
mm-hmm,
and you said 100.
Mm-hmm.
It's 275.
What?
What?
Yeah. It's like they say that they're on the road 3 out of 3 weeks a month. It's like a super, I don't know if strenuous is the right word, but like they're usually you'll have like a region as like a Michelin inspector. So you're like your Europe and your region is like America. It's not like the DMV. It's like Chicago, New York, DC, Boston,
oh my gosh,
whatever.
How do they determine where they go? It's just from people reviews, or is there like an inspector? I'm picturing an inspector general. It's like, all right, you got your marching orders. You're going to go to Billy Flugel Pants restaurant on South Street today.
Pretty
go
much. I think that's how it is. I think that they have like a list of restaurants to go to, and they just, it's like breakfast, and that's not breakfast, it's like lunch and dinner like 3 weeks out of a month. And so it's a lot of restaurants.
Cool. What a fact.
All right.
Also, I was right. Price is right.
Yeah,
come
yeah
at me. 101. Cool. That's super interesting. And now I'm even hungrier than I was when we began this podcast.
Absolutely.
It's always something difficult to do to make me more hungry. So I'm just always hungry. So, Michael, what's your segue?
So I'd imagine the Michelin process, there's a lot of bureaucracy, if you will, in order to become.
Red tape. Yes.
Yeah, it's very, very red tape, very almost government-like, you could say.
Ooh, one might say
yeah,
that
but
it's like
it
a governing body.
But it seems like they're efficient.
All right, just moving on. Mine's about the Senate filibuster.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So mine's pretty straightforward. We're not going to get into too many details until you guys struggle with an answer, but...
Whoa.
This
the
is
assumptions.
No, just like as you're going through the logic through it, I'll give you some filling in facts. How long is the longest filibuster in the U.S. Senate?
How long was the longest filibuster in the U.S. Senate?
Yep.
What unit of measure would you like? Hours, days?
Hours and minutes.
Hours and minutes.
Minutes.
Nice. That was great. We said don't talk over each other, but we didn't say anything about talking in unison. So, all right, we're going to say our answer at the same time.
Yep.
We're not. Okay, so the longest filibuster.
Longest filibuster.
I've seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. So
okay.
I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Lindsay's basically an expert then.
Where's that history degree when I need it?
Yeah, it was Senator Strom Thurmond, if that helps at all.
34 hours and 17 minutes.
Lindsay hit it dead on the money.
That's your line.
I'm just kidding. Just
she would have been mad. But I wanted
she was
that.
She was very impressed.
I was like,
just like
amazed.
Just a
wait, what did you say? 34 hours and 17 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gonna go. I think whatever it is, it's going to be like way longer than you would think it would be. I'm just like, the point of fun facts is that they're like, what? And so I'm going to go with like 49 hours.
Ooh.
58 minutes.
A whole week.
It's impressive.
Because you can't sleep. You have to be, right, you have to hold the floor.
Yeah. Oh, is it, are you allowed to like tag team filibusters?
You are not. You're because not then it yields the floor.
Okay. What if you have to poo?
Oh, no.
You're not allowed to leave the, I do believe in except for very specific instances, you can't leave the
what
Senate chamber.
To, like, cardiac arrest.
I believe that would end the filibuster.
I get it's like a marathon, but like, you know, sometimes dudes take, well, I mean, sometimes women too. But
to be clear, this is the longest spoken filibuster. I don't know if there's a difference, but I know our hosts, I know our hosts are very picky about these certain things. The perfect example is I hosted this last week. There was a question. The basic question was, on a clock face, what number comes after four?
Mm-hmm. One pointer. I had this a couple weeks ago.
And it and I told everybody, it's like, look, it's because of you players and you guys ask a lot of nitpicky question. We had two different qualifiers in front of that question.
It was like a standard clock face.
It was a standard clock face moving clockwise. And everybody's just like, why is that question so long? And I went, because of you. So, yeah. So this is the longest spoken filibuster in American history.
Maybe I was too ambitious. I kind of forgot how filibusters worked for a second.
Okay. So, yeah. So, basically, as I understand it, the basic premise is, according to West Wing anyway, as long as you – as it just runs until you give up the floor. You can't lean on anything. You can't.
What was the longest filibuster filibusting? I'm assuming that's a verb.
It's actually – it was filibustering. That is a verb. The Civil Rights Act of 1957.
Oh,
yikes.
Yeah, that's not a good...
here's some of the details he did in preparation. He took a steam bath earlier in the day to rid his body of excess liquid. This avoided the potential for any accidents in the chamber.
Oh, so you can't go to the bathroom.
You can't, I guess as I understand it, you can't leave the chamber.
Right, that makes sense. I don't know why I was thinking of... I was like, man, you could just take a break and just sit on the toilet for a while, but that doesn't make any sense.
He went to the floor armed with cough drops and Malton milk tablets.
Oh.
He allowed others to make short remarks and ask questions during his time, allowing him to sneak off to the cloakroom to gobble a sandwich. And to answer your other question, he had an aide wait in the cloakroom with a pail when he was about to step down from the dais in case of an emergency evacuation.
Oh my gosh, what an aide. I don't know if... Ugh. Hey, I need you to hold my piss bucket. Yeah. Internship requirements must be level. level hands, because you wouldn't want the bucket to... spill over. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, so do you guys have any other guesses? You're both high. I will tell you that. You're both high.
Both high. See, before you said that, I was like, no, I'm not a quitter. I'm going to stick with my guess. But
I feel like 40 hours without going to the bathroom and sleeping.
So that's like a whole bunch. You would be delirious by the end of that.
I think you might die, right? The guy that watched Netflix for however the longest person staying awake. Yeah, he had like a medical emergency afterward because he'd stayed awake for like 3 days straight. Your body just shuts down. I will say I still think it was over 24 hours. I want to say 25 hours and 17 minutes.
I'm going to say 26 hours.
Oh, all right. She's price is right in me.
26 hours and 12 minutes.
Okay, you're both relatively in the ballpark then. All right. It's 24 hours, 18 minutes.
Wow.
Here's some of the things.
And to be clear, he was protesting or filibustering the Civil Rights Act, just to be clear.
He was filibustering the Civil Rights Act of 1957. I don't know whether that means, like, I don't know whether he was filibustering in order to get more votes for it or if they were against it. I don't know.
Okay.
we will link to the article as always.
Okay, I feel like that's important. That's a very important distinction, Michael.
Right.
For
no,
this guy's legacy.
But he was filibustering the vote on it. I know that for sure. which side he fell on, I'm not sure. Here's some of the things he talked about during his filibuster. He read verbatim the voting laws of each one of the 48 states.
Mm.
He read the U.S. Criminal Code.
Oh.
He read a Supreme Court decision followed by more laws. He allowed the majority leader to conduct some minor Senate business, such as swearing in the new senator for Wisconsin, with a promise that Thurman would be allowed to resume his filibuster. At 1:40 a.m., he talked about jury trials.
Oh.
At 6:45 a.m., he was having a back and forth with an arriving senator about a bill. That senator then left for breakfast with President Eisenhower. he fielded questions from sympathetic senators looking to give his voice a break, so... That is one of the things I do remember about West Wing is you can yield for a question without yielding the floor.
Right.
That is according to West Wing, not any laws I've ever heard of. That is the Stackhouse filibuster. Great episode if you're interested. Oh. And then there's like five other things on here, including the Declaration of Independence.
I have two questions about filibusters.
Okay.
One, can you talk about just anything?
I believe so.
Because everything he did was like related to law.
Right.
In the U.S. government. Could I just read like
people
all
have read
of the
Dr.
Lord
Seuss.
Of the Rings? Yeah. Okay, so you can just do anything you want.
I don't know if there's any like exceptions for profanity or anything like that in the Senate rules, but
I don't know.
But as I understand it, it's fair game. You can read pretty much anything.
I would doubt that. I feel like free speech, you should be allowed to swear, but also women aren't allowed to wear like bare shoulders dresses. So it's a little archaic. Yeah.
And two, do people have to be present for your filibuster? Can you be filibustering in an empty chamber? Do people like?
I don't believe
no one watches
so,
you filibuster.
Are you really filibustering?
God, that I feel like that should be our secret phrase.
Let's make it. Write it down. Write it down. You got to say it again, Michael.
Yeah, one more time.
You said it.
Oh, did I say it? If no one hears you filibuster, are you really filibustering?
Got it.
If no one hears you filibuster, are you really filibustering? Filibuster nut. No, wait. No, that's not. That's inappropriate.
See, that might be one of the things you can't say on the Senate floor.
No, I think if
I
were... I
don't think they'd get it. Yeah, maybe they would.
There's not enough millennials I would just do the entire Hamilton soundtrack.
There you go.
Singing or spoken? Singing.
All of the above.
She'll do it once spoken and then once sung and then get into the mixtape.
Right, and then, yeah. But then you have to like, you'll do like all the melodies and then you'll do all the harmonies and you're like the backing vocals. You're just like,
Well, Hamilton is on the West End, which I'm very curious to see because I went and saw Grease and Avenue Q on the West End, which are both very American plays. And I didn't, at the time, they were just cheap. So I was like, oh, I'll go. And it was just a big poo-pooing on America and American culture.
Nice.
And I'm wondering with Hamilton, like the British and the King do not come across very well. You know, and
they should be over it by now.
This has always been one of my questions about like English history. How is King George looked at as far as English history goes? Like you think about like kind of the American failures and stuff like that. Do they look at him and go, guys, they were like farmers. How did you lose this?
Well, I was talking to my British friend about the Revolutionary War. I think I was talking about Hamilton, and he's just like, we don't learn about it. It just doesn't come up. You know, like they're like, yeah, this war happened. We lost it. We no longer have the colonies. And like they don't go into detail about really like, because I guess.
Well, if the British were going over all of the colonies that they lost, it would never be.
That's a 3-year course.
Yeah, it would be a never ending class for sure.
So.
Have we done that as a puzzle round? Is name given the country? Was it a British colony or not?
I think it will be now.
I think so, but maybe not.
I feel like we have.
Well, will be now. So wait, did we get your answer?
Yes. Yeah, 24 hours, 18 minutes.
Okay. Is there anything else we needed to talk about? No.
You had a second question about.
Oh, your second question. Sorry.
It's so good. I just like don't. Okay. Well.
I just forgot your second question.
I asked my second question.
Did I give you an answer?
Yeah, because it was, can you talk about anything, and do people have to witness your filibustering?
Oh, okay.
Hence why we got the secret phrase.
That one, I feel like, as long as it's in session, then yes. Somebody else has to be there, because you got to at least have a record.
You got to have somebody writing it down.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Old Ethel.
This is American history.
So if no one is there to hear you filibuster, then you aren't filibustering. You're just talking to yourself in an empty room.
That's exactly what's happening.
Exactly. Cool. Well, it's very clear that we don't know either. So this has been our We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
Columbo?
What are you not done?
No Columbo?
No. Columbo, Michael and I were very excited because we had a whole Columbo spiel. And I love Columbo. I can't talk about how much I love Columbo. Actually, you know what? I will talk about how much I love Columbo on next week's podcast.
All right. Perfect.
And Emily doesn't know anything about Columbo, but she's not here next week. But she'll listen to the episode and then she'll know. No, we don't have time. Guys, we don't have time. I have a strict clock. Okay, this has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Michael.
I'm Emily.
I'm going to steal your fact for next week. We don't know either.
Bye.